conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andysgirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andysgirls. Sign up today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon. There may have been 200, but I'm still number one.
100 episodes in, and I'm still 200,000 feet from stardom.
Okay, I was like, where is he going? That was good. That was a thinker, which I love. I love a think. This is the episode for thinking and reflection. You guys, it's Andy's Girls, episode 200. And that feels wild to me, like literally wild. And I, of course, had to have none other but OG of the AG, co-host of the podcast you might know her from, and senior producer at VH1, Damian Bellino, here to celebrate this wonderful, wonderful occasion.
Can I say I'm really honored to be here? I know we texted a little bit about this, but you know, I was just on recently, and then you were like, hey, are you good to record 200? And I was like, oh, I didn't know it was happening. Like, I didn't know. I'm so honored. Like, I'm so honored that you're having me here, and also so proud that Andy's Girls is still going. I listened to a bit of our first episode and I was like, the way we're talking, it's like, do you think that there are production favorites like Vicky Gunvalson? And you're like, I do. I think it. And like, we're like, what? Like, the obviously talking about this shit regularly on the pod, we have developed a shorthand that is like so organic, I think, now. But mm-hmm. it was so funny to hear like baby us. I mean, God, we were like 14 doing like theorizing about like production and like, oh, is Vicky Andy's favorite from OC? And it's like, what? Why are we talking like this?
Yes. I mean, first off, of course you had to come back for 200. Like, regardless of whenever you were on. Any kind of anniversary memory memoir, we have to have the OGs of the AG reunited. And I did just listen to the first episode of Andy's Girls. I actually did like a pop up body out, which I have to do and sing song. and shout out to VH1. But I recorded a live reaction as I listened to the first episode for Patreon, which is up now, you guys. And it was wild. I mean, I was like 10 minutes in and saying, are we going to introduce ourselves? it was literally like 10 things I love about Bethany for like 45 minutes. It's just so, and you can hear us because remember when we started AG and we would like drink every episode I know you were chewing, which I discovered a couple minutes in and was like, absolutely not. But we used to drink at the beginning of each episode, and then we at one point were attempting to make it like themed. Like, we would get different housewife. Mm-hmm. We would do cocktails and like name them after housewives, or do different housewife drinks.
Yeah,
like you spent, I still remember, didn't you spend $35 on Lisa Vanderpump's?
I like got
sangria,
it at
Buca de Beppo.
Bless Full Dorit circle. And Lisa Vanderpump's involvement with Buca de Beppo. Yeah, it was the only place that carried it in New York City. So I was mm-hmm. on a mission. Yeah, it was so funny to listen to it. Also, you know, I love us, but we are both quiet, which is like the thing I would never use to describe either one of us. I was like, why mm-hmm. are we so quiet? We're both like, do you think Carol is awesome? And I'm like, Carol like is one of those women who like likes hanging out with guys. It's like, what am I saying? It was cool. It was very cool and weird. I remember I was transported to that conversation. I remember you telling me how you were like in a meeting when Brooks's
yes.
like cancer non-diagnosis came out, and you like talked about it. And I mean, I was like, oh, I remember that exact moment of you telling me that story, but also that it feels like 100 years ago.
I remember the exact conference room I was in. I was with like senior people. I started saying that while I was like recording, while I was listening, because I remember that exact moment where I was like, okay, guys, we just need to like stop for a second, because like, I don't even remember how I introduced it into conversation. It was so wildly unrelated to nothing I do work related is, well, actually there has been a little crossover with event production and Housewives, but with this specific kind of event and like the topics being discussed, I don't know how I was able to loop that into convo, but
where there's a will, there's a way.
Where there's a will, there's a way. And it was just so interesting listening to it, because I thought it was going to be, you know, like, obviously, you know this, but AG isn't a recap show, but I wasn't sure if the first episode had a tinge of recap to it, but it really didn't feel like it did. It really feels like from the start, this has truly been stream of consciousness conversation. Like, we were talking about Housewives events that had occurred several years prior to us recording nearly 5 years ago. I mean, it's interesting that while I think our conversation has gotten more nuanced mm-hmm. and maybe the like framework of our episodes have deepened with time. God forbid we say age, shout out Ramona. I think it was interesting to me that there did appear to be a framework, albeit one that I hadn't really thought of before we started recording, that was in effect for our like pilot podcast.
Yeah, I think I mean, obviously it is the great thing that you continue to carry on with Andy's Girls, is that it's just like talk. Like, I always love that I can come here and I never feel like I have to like write down questions mm-hmm. I have for you or like thoughts, because I like, I have my emotional reaction to watching the episodes and how I think about the women. But then it's always like, also, like, in that episode, we were talking about how much we both loved Erica Jane. And I was like, wow.
Oh, my God.
We're both like, Erica Jane is perfect. The moment. And I was like, that doesn't even sound like either of us. But I like that there's always, like, tangents. And there's always, like, oh, did you read this new, like, the, or this is like this on that franchise from 100 years ago. Like, I love mm-hmm. that that's always what Andy's Girls has been. And obviously it has evolved. And I think you're right, become more nuanced. But it's always, like, nice to just come in. I think about this shit, or when I watch it, you know, I just have an emotional reaction mm-hmm. to watching these women.
And I always tell people when they're, like, new to AG, you know, that it's stream of consciousness. I try not to do a big edit relating to the actual conversation itself. I mean, that's happened, like, a number of times, meaning maybe 5 times or around there in the course of 200 episodes, which just goes to show, like, the trust between people when we're talking, and the fact that, like, you don't necessarily need to prepare anything. Ideally, people have watched the episodes of The Housewives airing, and sometimes most of the time that happens, sometimes it doesn't. But the hope is that people feel comfortable enough and welcome enough to open up and be vulnerable, so that it is truly a conversation, because that's where I find just personal delight. I just want to talk with people and hear someone else's experience and how that plays into their perception and feelings about what they're watching on Bravo TV. Like, that is what's interesting to me at the end of the day. And so I'm just so appreciative that, you know, 200 eps in, we still have so much more to say.
Yeah, so congratulations to you. And also, like, kudos to you, because I think that people know that. Like, people know that that's what the show is now. I think because it has a following that comes to hear those types of conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, there are podcasts, Bravo-centric podcasts, where they talk about each episode in particular, or where the people sort of are, like, in the majority opinion about maybe how people are feeling. Like, we're both team Bethany,
right,
or whatever.
Which is great. Those are great.
I think that you have, you know, cultivated something here, curated something where you have great guests on, and also that, like, you allow people to, like, there's disagreements. I mean, at least in our episodes, there's disagreements. And
what?
I was like, I went to walk with a friend the other day in the cold, and she was like, my roommate was just like, I didn't realize your friend Damien is Damien from Andy's Girls Damien. And I was like, wait. And I, like, didn't understand what she was saying. I was like, what? And she was like, you're on a podcast with about Housewives sometimes? And I was like, oh, yeah, great. So congratulations, Sarah Galley. It's great. And I also great, like, you have a Patreon that also this is a job, and you have a job that you're, like, producing great content for people. So congratulations, and subscribe to her Patreon.
Thank you for shouting out my Patreon, the number one way, and by the way, only way that I'm currently getting in a word that I'm not going to use that's similar to income, because I feel like maybe that will help me when we file taxes shortly for 2020. Yeah, and it's just, I just have to say that, like, there have been other podcasts that have been inspired by AG and stepping into this world of really talking about our own experiences through Housewives. And I'm just really proud of what you and I created together, which really was, and I think still remains, a very original and different and dynamic look at Bravo, and, you know, the psychology behind the behavior of these crazy women that we love to watch on TV. And also the fact that, like, as AG has matured, as I have grown in the last 5 years and changed, as hopefully folks do over time, I think what I'm most proud of is hearing from people who have listened to AG from the start, or who are new Andy's Girls listeners, who feel like this is a safe space in which to present an opinion or discuss an experience or share something from their lives that they haven't necessarily shared with others, or, you know, just open up in any way. I'm just so appreciative of the AGs, because I feel like the Andy's Girls community is really special. And I've said that on previous episodes, and I just want to shout out all the listeners, because there is something really that I honestly feel like feels like sets apart Andy's Girls listeners from other listeners of other podcasts, even within the Bravo community, where it can become kind of toxic. And I have seen that taken place online, and I'm like, oh, like that's sometimes I feel like I wish this is so selfish of me, but sometimes I feel like I wish there was some sort of like manual to watching Housewives or discussing it online where it's like, wait, let's not go to that dark spot, because we don't know these women. We haven't, even if we've met them, interacted with them, you don't truly know these women that you're watching on screen. But I do feel like we've developed relationships with each other. And I just want to share just a little bit of gratitude to the listeners who get that and who also understand that, you know, like our opinions about Erica Jayne may change. But even if you don't agree with something that's being expressed, you are still open to listening to that opinion. And also to the idea that, you know, if I say something and I fuck up or I say something that I regret later, that we give ourselves the capacity and the space to grow without shaming each other. And I think of that a little bit because I just watched It's a Sin. Have you watched It's a Sin?
I haven't.
Oh my God. It's on HBO. I'm like fucking dying for just everything on HBO Max. But it's done by, it's a limited series done by Russell T. Davies, who also wrote Years and Years, which is one of the best limited series that I've ever seen. And It's a Sin is about the advent of the AIDS crisis through the perspective of a group of friends living in the UK. And it's incredibly powerful and beautifully done. And there's a moment where a cast member, a character rather, is talking about the use of shame and the power and devastation that shame can bring as a tool of destruction and harm. And the idea that when you try to shame someone, you are attacking the very center of their core. You are trying to tell them that the person that they are or the person that they appear to be is wrong and should feel bad and should feel pain and deserves that. And it was incredibly, spoiler alert? No, that's not really a spoiler. It was incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. I was like sobbing. And I just think, like, when I think about Andy's Girls, because we're talking about the 200th episode, just circling back, I think about the idea that hopefully when we're having these kinds of conversations and we're talking about things, and we can talk about, we've talked about really serious topics on AG, my hope and goal is that we're doing it in an environment where we don't have a vested interest or desire and don't exhibit behaviors of genuinely shaming each other. Because, like, we can joke and, you know, like team Kyle versus Kim, you and I have different feelings, and like we can get into it, and we've had like heated debates on AG and off about Housewives, and I think that that's great. But we don't do it, and the goal isn't to do it in a way to make someone feel bad. And there have been shades of that that I have seen, that I think a lot of Bravo content creators have seen in the last year, couple years, really in the last year, that have made a lot of us uncomfortable. And I just have to say that maybe the number one thing that I'm proud of with Andy's Girls is that this is an environment where, regardless of how we feel about opinions about some of these women and their behaviors and whatever else, we aren't trying to shame each other as a result. And it is a safe space, hopefully, where you don't feel like you're going to be challenged or made fun of because of your sexual identity, race, economic status, ethnicity, you know, perception of the challenges related to whatever you are going through in your life, that this is a space where hopefully you feel comfortable talking about it and not feeling targeted because of it.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say, in a very long-winded way, watch It's a Sin on HBO Max. It's very good. And thank you, because that isn't something that happens because, like, I say, oh, this is a safe space. It, like, it comes from actual exhibited human behavior. And that is because of the AGs who send in satchels, who have, you know, continued dialogue online. And I just am really appreciative. I think that's like the number one thing that I'm most proud of, honestly, at the end of the day.
That's beautiful.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm a beauty. I am in a Springsteen hoodie, which I wear 24/7.
Do you like, Springsteen? Is that like a thing?
Here's the thing with Bruce Springsteen. I don't think that I really appreciated him. Although if it's like a Springsteen, you know, Bon Jovi or whomever, or like Springsteen, who's like a contemporary of Springsteen that would make sense
like to compare? Like Dave Matthews?
Billy Joel. Band? No, not
like Dave. Oh, you mean like... Like an equal like person. To compare,
yeah. Oh, like yeah. Maybe Billy Joel or something.
Is a good example, yeah.
But I, you know, like I was raised on, I guess Springsteen. Yeah, Springsteen and like the Carpenters and Motown and like shout out like great classic music, and started dating someone who was like very into Springsteen. And I went to a Springsteen concert with him in New Jersey when we were dating 150 years ago. And bought a hoodie that is just like the most comfortable sweatshirt I've ever had. And actually just thinking about that moment, it was a fantastic concert. If you can see Springsteen live, and we will go back to live concerts, I swear to God it's going to happen. He is like one of the performers to see. The concerts are 17 and a half hours long. They're so good. Everyone's super into it. And I do remember this was like, I want to say 8 years ago. We went to this concert in New Jersey. And we're exiting the venue to, like, get back to a fucking bus to come back to New York. And I did see Kim D yelling at a cop.
Oh,
and
I love that it all came back.
It was wonderful.
It's all come back.
It all comes back. And I don't want to say, like, Bruce, like, that wasn't, like, the best part of the night. Like, I don't want to, like, Bruce, if you're listening. But I do have to say it was, like, tied with Bruce. Like, Kim D, and she looked... She looked elevated, shall we say.
Oh, okay. That was not what I was expecting you to say.
Yeah, I think she got a little, she was a little elevated. Her personality.
Got it.
She was a little.
I thought you meant she like looked like her no, style was elevated.
No, definitely not. Nope. There was like a je ne sais quoi about her.
Got it.
And just watching her scream at a uniformed police officer for God knows what. Like,
good for her.
It was very Alec Baldwin vibes of like someone has a temper and they feel like now's the time to express it. It was honestly fascinating. Anyway, Damien, listen, we could talk about how much we love each other all day and I would love that. But there has been so much happening.
Oh my God, so many episodes, so much happening in the world.
First off, I was bitching to you yesterday about the fact that I had to rewatch three episodes of Housewives. And I was like, it's too much. I need two a week because there's so much to unpack and I want to like give equal weight or whatever, or be able to focus on different stuff. And you were like, JK, there are four. And I had 100% forgotten about, I want to say, Dallas. Yeah. Like I didn't.
I forgot Jersey had premiered and you were like, Jersey and Salt Lake City, you have to watch again or something. And I was like, also Dallas. And you were like, I forgot about Dallas. But then I'm fresh off watching just Dallas. Like, that's the one I watched moments before I joined this Zoom. And I was actually excited because I felt like there was production stuff going on. So it made me interested.
You know what? It was the first episode of Dallas where I didn't feel dirty watching, where I was like, oh, I feel like I'm watching a housewife show and not a what not to do as a person living in society. You know, like I wasn't distracted by the stuff that has made me feel very uncomfortable when it comes to how, you know, the brandy of it all was handled during the premiere and also the introduction of Dr. Tiffany Moon. I felt like we have now at least been able to settle into a dynamic in an episode where I was like able to watch it and enjoy a lot of it.
Yeah, because the week prior, I was a little bit concerned because there was like Tiffany was like weird about that party. And then Brandy, JK, ate crickets and then vomited. And I was like, this is, I was concerned that like the conflict was going to be like everybody versus Tiffany and Deandra. And I was like, that's not the look I want to watch. Like, I don't want to watch mm-hmm. everybody attack the new girl who's clearly like the smartest and best person on the show at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like this week I was like, oh, the fight of like the season, like the is Carrie versus Deandra. And that is, I actually am interested in that because I think
we're both just staring at each other.
I think that Carrie's, to me and you, I know that we are both, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like Carrie seems terrible.
Go for it. You can speak for
Carrie
me.
Carrie seems
yeah,
terrible. And she does seem like really harsh to Deandra, but I think that that's who Carrie has always been. And I think that Deandra thought that was like a hoot last season when Carrie was an asshole to Leanne at every possible moment because it was mm-hmm. funny because Deandra and Leanne were having their falling out and it was like an ally for Deandra. But now that Carrie has become close friends with Stephanie and I guess Brandy, Deandra feels alienated because she is now the, like, and Carrie might be that person who is really fun and actually a good friend, but always needs to be sort of like ribbing somebody to have a good time, which I've been that friend. I've been on the other end of that type of friendship where like mm-hmm. your friendship is sort of like rooted in like teasing and also like borderline meanness. I think that that was like, I know a lot of people and myself that were like that in their 20s that was like, actually, mm-hmm. it's not fun to be friends with people when you're always being mean to each other and like talking kind of like about each other behind their backs. Like that's not friendship. And it also like that doesn't have to be like your sense of humor doesn't need to be like being quote unquote like mean to be funny. I think mm-hmm. that Carrie, I'm like, I think like why is Stephanie friends with you? Like I'm kind of over Stephanie and Brandy, not and Cameron, I guess. And she's an alien. But like I'm confused by the dynamic, like why everyone was like on Carrie's side. And I was like, is she great? But the show doesn't do her any favors because everyone is acting like Deandra's being a jerk at this cocktail hour dinner. But I also was like, but Carrie has been awful to Deandra. And there obviously is like back and forth. Like I think Deandra saying like you have your kids are all grown up, like you have nothing to worry about, and Carrie being like you have no idea what my family is going through. Like that's a valid, like Carrie's, who does, like Deandra was out of line in my opinion there because like yeah, maybe Carrie didn't want to tell her about her kids, you know, stuff that they were going through. And that, I don't know, just because you're not, like, wearing your family drama on your sleeve doesn't mean that, like, you don't have stuff. But I don't know. I'm sort of going on a rant that's not making a lot of sense. But I just, like, I'm invested in this friendship and the fallout of it. And I don't know. I don't know who Carrie is. Like, I can't figure out if, like, the show is makes her worse than she maybe is in IRL based on her friendships with all of these women.
I wonder, you know, there was that moment at the end where Deandra's like, she's a bully, or Dr. Tiffany is like, she's a bully. And then everyone else was sort of hedging their bets. And I wonder if they had said, Carrie targets Deandra, Carrie is reactive, another word that wasn't bullying. Because I think for the women, the use of the word bullying has been so overused on Housewives and also politicized on Housewives that they may have been more open to that, to a different kind of conversation, or rather a different response to that conversation if a different term had been used that still described Carrie's behavior but wasn't using like the literal term bullying, or if maybe that word just gave them an out because they didn't want to step up and say like, yeah, the way that Carrie has behaved toward Deandra is wrong. I mean, Stephanie saying, well, you know, she's been crying. Carrie's been crying. She's really upset. For me was like, who cares if Carrie has been crying? It doesn't feel like.
It doesn't invalidate Deandra's right. feelings also, because I think actually I wish I could remember the exact quote, but I actually think that like Tiffany, when Deandra went inside, Tiffany said something like, she's really upset. Like, she has a lot mm-hmm. going on. And Carrie was like, well, I'm more upset and I have more going on. And then someone, I think, maybe Tiffany, was like, well, it's not a competition. But I think that mm-hmm. that is the issue, is like, yes, you can feel mad. You can feel like she's a shitty friend. Like, also, it doesn't feel good to hear your friends talking about you behind your back, like, in earshot. That doesn't feel mm-hmm. good. But also, she's entitled to her feelings the way that you're entitled to yours. And I was in, what I thought was interesting about the episode was, I think when a housewife like removes themselves from a situation, it's like some of the most real life stuff that you can do, because it, to me, it's mm-hmm. like Deandra being like, I'm going to lose this day of filming, or I'm not going to be in this that much of this episode because I'm going home. To me was like, and who knows if she actually goes home, but the way they edited the episode and the way it ended made me be like, is she really going to leave and go home and see her husband? It seems like she's like checking out. And to me, that's the most interesting thing, because it means I'm actually would rather, for my own sanity, be out of this situation than to like be on the show and have a moment on camera, because that's like real people remove themselves from conflict, or they have the conflict and then they leave. But like, you don't stay around people who are triggering you and causing conflict and being nasty to you. So I was into it because I was like, Deandra's like at a breaking point, like something is happening in this dynamic, but all of the other women, I guess, and sort of instead of Tiffany, are like not on Deandra's side, or they are like not choosing to interfere or mediate in a way that made me think like, but I feel like there's something we're not getting. I feel like maybe Carrie's really abrasive on camera and what we see, but like in the room, you're like, oh, she's a good time girl. And like, she's like a straight talker. That's like a lot. But I just was like, what is the deal? Because I don't know. I don't know. But I was into Deandra being like, I'm leaving. And I was like, yeah, leave. Don't get paid for this episode.
I feel like Deandra was more likable in that moment and in that episode than she ever has been before.
I thought Deandra, this is so shocking to say, but I feel like this season, also because of her friendship with Tiffany and the ways in which she's been able to, I don't want to say voice of reason, but for lack of a better term, I feel like she has been like one of the few, like in times where I wish that Cameron would be a human or that Stephanie would actually speak up in the room opposed to in a confessional. Deandra has been like, ladies, be kinder to Tiffany, or like, ladies, she's new to this group, give her a break, or like, ladies, she's a fucking doctor during a global pandemic. Like, listen, everyone has stuff, but like, that is a big thing. And like, take a minute. I feel like she is been the voice of, quote unquote, voice of reason in a lot of scenarios this season, and it's made me been like, I'm rooting for her in this situation, but I was confused why everyone else was like, Deandra, don't leave. Carrie's not a bully, though. And I was like, wait, what? She was so mean at Brandy's birthday party about like the fucking, you don't have a wine key and there's no ice and like, it's not air conditioning in the bus. And I was like, you're a jerk.
It does feel like there's some sort of comparison that could be made between some of the friendship hemming and hawing on Salt Lake City and on Dallas, because I watch how Lisa seemed horrified and triggered about Heather trying to put pressure on accountability for friends who are behaving in a toxic manner, where it's like, I look at Heather, who was saying to Lisa, essentially, why don't you believe in boundaries? Like, there are ways in which people go too far and they need to be held accountable, and your love for them should inspire you to tell them that their behavior is wrong. And I look at what happened on Dallas, and it felt like a lot of these women were confusing the idea of boundaries with not being a good friend, which is not the case. I mean, like, it's, you have to be a friend to yourself first before you can be a friend to other people. And if someone is behaving poorly to you and making fun of you or targeting you or acting in a manner that's disrespectful, you deserve and owe it to yourself to attempt to hold them accountable, or more importantly, just set a boundary for yourself that, like, it's not necessarily your job to teach them to be a better friend, but it is your responsibility as a person to understand that that kind of behavior toward you is unacceptable and will not be accepted further if it had been in the past. And the women on Dallas, it appeared like, seemed to be saying to Deandra and Tiffany, we love her, she seems hurt, so we feel like we have to defend her behavior or gaslight it or pretend it didn't exist, because that's what friendship currently means to us. And with Jen on Salt Lake City, she's like, I'm not going to let this person go. I believe that, you know, like, you don't just throw someone away, when the conversation is really, if someone is harming you, set a boundary for yourself and at least respect a boundary your friend has set.
Okay, well, I could talk about Lisa Barlow and her performance at the reunion for a good hour and a half, but if I can interject to talk about the Dallas thing, which I agree with you, I think that they are they're like confusing holding a friend accountable with
being a bad friend.
Being a bad friend.
To your bad friend.
And yes, I agree. I feel like they're taking Deandra calling Carrie's me, like the way she feels about the way Carrie's treating her as, yeah, that she, they're like, well, you're not being sensitive to what Carrie's going through. And it's like,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't, that does not, like, that
absolve her.
Does not, mm-hmm. She doesn't, we don't live in a vacuum. You don't get to have a bad thing happen and then be a jerk to everybody. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we can offer you grace in these moments, but that doesn't mean that you can just be a jerk to everybody. And we say like, oh, you're going through something. I have to say, I love Tiffany. But when she started crying, and this was the one I was excited to talk to you about and be on Andy's Girls today, when she started crying and she was like, sorry, this is reminding me of my friends and I'm crying for you guys, but also,
or my, she said it was reminding me of my parents.
And yeah, so I'm crying for you. I don't like to see my friends fight. So I'm crying for you, but I'm also crying for me. And all the ladies were like, and I was sort of like, oh, this is like not a great look. But then I was reminded of Garcelle needing to remove herself in Beverly Hill from the trip in Rome. Is that where they were, Rome? When she was like, it was like the last leg of the Rome trip and everyone was coming for Denise one last time. Like she had just come mm-hmm. back in and everyone was like, we need to talk about. And Denise was like, no. And Garcelle was like, I'm sorry, I need to go. And like, I'm sorry, I need a minute. And like left and then came back and was like, sorry, I miss my kids. And it was like a weird moment. And I was like, Tiffany in that moment reminded me of Garcelle in that moment, which is to say, when you're like drinking so much, traveling away from your family, and your new job is that you are around conflict on camera all the time, I think it like becomes overwhelming. And there's actually like those moments reminded me of each other because I thought both were weird. But I feel like mm-hmm. it's actually the show getting to the women. And I feel like Tiffany was like, maybe she was triggered and reminded her of her parents. But also it's like, I don't want to watch these two. This isn't fun to watch two women that I don't know that well just scream at each other. And I'm like drunk. Like I don't have all of my like whatever, you know, faculties. Wherewithal. Yeah. And it's like, and I'm like not with any of my actual people. My husband and my kids aren't here. Like, and I was like, oh, that felt it was like not cute to me. But then I was like, but it feels real. It's like really that I think like that first year of like, this is now one of my jobs is to actually like engage in this conversation. And I don't want to.
And I feel like you have to work against your own instinct. My instinct would be to leave that immediate. I would disengage like a motherfucker. I don't want to be a present for that. I don't want, it's like obvious toxic energy. It's women screaming at each other. I would not IRL if that filming was taking place and I had had some champs and I had traveled and it's the middle of COVID. So how many opportunities, if you're behaving responsibly, do you have to even be around friends, IRL, let alone coworkers who you don't have a relationship with, many of whom have already treated you like shit? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of different pressure on a person. And you know this is being filmed for reality TV where it's a very specific kind of show where you know your behaviors, responses, silence, or voice are going to be picked apart. There's a lot there.
Well, and I think we've seen women not engage, like Erica and Meredith, and how it's like really fun in the beginning, but then it's not fun when they refuse to play the game. And then we've also seen people, like, I think my reaction to that, like, if I see Carrie and Deandra fighting, you know, I root for an underdog. So I feel like I would be like, Carrie, shut the fuck up. And then I would mm-hmm. be red in the face and I would be super aggressive and reactionary. And that could make for great TV, but, like, might not be how I really wanted to respond to an argument that had nothing to do with me. But, like, when mm-hmm. you're sitting in it. So I think that, and after, like, I sat with it, I was like, okay, now I'm kind of into this moment of Tiffany, like, breaking. Because, like, I mean, I wish the show could break the fourth wall more because I think that it's, like, some of the most fun stuff is seeing moments like that. But when it's framed as, like, a, sorry, I don't want to watch my friends fight. And it's like, no, you're crying because this is a miserable job and you're a fucking doctor and you're like, oh, my God, this is a lot right now.
You know what I don't understand that I would like for someone to explain to me, and that person is Stephanie. It appears that Stephanie and Dr. Tiffany Moon are like pals IRL. They've been hanging out. They seem to be doing well in their friendship with each other.
Yeah, they're not going to be by the reunion.
Well, this is what I don't understand, because I'm watching these episodes play out and it feels like at times Stephanie makes swipes at Dr. Tiffany Moon that are completely unnecessary, that also feel like they're very different from the character of the Stephanie that I've seen for several seasons. And I don't understand where this energy is coming from. And then I watch them like chilling on Instagram stories when they go grab tea. And I love that for them. I want them. I genuinely want them to be friends. But I don't understand where this like negative energy from Stephanie's end is coming on, is coming from, or has been edited to appear that it's coming from, and like how that will play out as the season goes on.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's actually not something I totally recognize it, and I'm like agreeing with you, but I didn't think about it in such a salient, like it was such a salient point that you're making. And I think that with the loss of Leanne, Stephanie operates a new role on the show. Like she has sort of been, for a Greek chorus, she's sort of the voice of reason, but now she's sort of like being the like quick talking, like funny confessional person. And that's never been the Stephanie we know. But also to me, I've been really disappointed in her, in like group scenarios, in the way that she's sort of never been a part of the conflict. She never really speaks up in any of the arguments that have happened to date. Like she was totally like, let Brandy get a pass, and we didn't see her hold her accountable at all. And like, that was not great. And all of like the chicken feet stuff. And then at Watch What Happens. No. I'm sorry. She talked about like her closet. She's just had like little digs. And I'm like, I think that, is it production or is it like Stephanie having new, you know, we always talk about that X season where the housewife gets maybe like confident or starts to listen to like what their like gaggle is telling them. And then it's like, I don't want Stephanie to become annoying. Like, I want you to continue to be relatable and the person you've been, but are you like, are producers telling you to like have more fun in your confessionals? Are you deciding that you're like the star of the show now, so you're getting a little more free? Like, I don't know what it is, but I think On Atlanta is a particular franchise, and I think Potomac in a lot of ways as well, where they are like kind of nasty nice in confessionals, and it's like forgiven. But I think a lot of the other franchises where it's like predominantly white women, people will be like, you were really mean in your confessionals and I thought we were friends. So I will be interested to see what the dynamic between them will be like once the entire season has aired. If like Tiffany will be like, oh yeah, Stephanie was having fun and we've talked about some of that stuff already and like we're cool, or if it will be like, me and Stephanie were cool, but then I saw all the shit she talked in confessionals and I'm sort of like, are we cool? So I will be interested to see what that is at the end of this season.
I think the women on Atlanta are more honest. Yes. And like on Dallas, I'm just trying to understand, because I do love Stephanie. I still love her. And I also understand that for those of us who have like exalted her as some sort of angel of God or something, for that's not sustainable.
Totally.
And it is a good thing for people to be revealed as complicated. Like, I don't begrudge her for having a difference of opinion or for behaving in a way that's different from how I would. I actually appreciate that, because then I'm like, okay, this is like a multi-layered person who is complicated and may behave differently than I would. And I am interested to see that, because that feels honest to me. It's just that I don't get what her intention is in some of this. Like, it doesn't feel – it's one thing if she's, like, genuinely being honest about this and I disagree with her. I don't know if this is true to Stephanie. It just feels so outside of who she is, understanding that she's had that Stephanie glow.
I think it – yeah, I think that's so accurate. I mean, I think that – her sort of disappointing me in group scenarios is more makes her more interesting.
Yes,
because
100%.
Because I expected more from her. So now I'm like, oh, you're not even holding your best friend. Like, if you don't hold her accountable, then none of these women will, which of course is what we've seen. But the confessional thing is a great point. I mean, I think that, is that really who she is? I have to assume, my assumption is that she is feeling like the star of the show now. And therefore, I think that she and Cam were positioned by the network to be like going into this season. It was like they were the stars and that was them against each other, because Leanne was gone. No one likes Carrie and Deandra. And then Brandy was on the out. So I feel like it positioned them from that reunion on as like they were the two leads. They were at odds at the end of the season. And then the season started with the two of them like getting back on good like footing and being friends. I think she feels super confident, and it's not a great look, but like, I'm hoping that it will, maybe she'll see herself back and be like, okay, I need to rein it in. And like, maybe I should have been nicer to Tiffany, but I think she probably feels good, like confident at doing the show now. And there isn't this sort of threat of Leanne, who is a huge force and really combative.
So negative.
And like was a favorite for the network. Now she knows that she's that person and she's like, I know how to do this show now and I don't have to worry about being in conflict with Leanne and like dealing with that energy. And I'm running it. Like, it's me and my best friend Brandy and like everyone else likes me. So like, great. I'm going to be kind of like nasty to the new girl in a fun way, but like in confessionals. And it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of into it if the reveal is that she's a mean girl. I just don't know that she is. If she's a mean girl, then like, let's see that. But I think that, I don't know. I need to see more from Stephanie and Brandy's like dying. I need to see more of them and this. I don't know. I need everyone to not just be against Deandra. I need it to be like a equal split in the group.
I don't see Stephanie thinking like, oh, I'm the center Texas star horseshoe holder person. I don't know what it is. And that could be my blinders. That could be because I've like bought into, I don't see that. I see that more from like fucking Carrie with a K, who thinks she's God's gift because she won over Leanne, than I do with Stephanie.
Interesting.
I don't even know if I see that with Deandra.
I think we did see that because remember we saw that weird argument on her, was it her first season or her second season, where they were like, she and Leanne were like having an argument about
I'm sorry. I meant this season. Yeah, season's past 100%.
But I think that Deandra has been knocked down a few pegs, and I think like also probably learned her position when her former best friend got fired, and like then she was like really low on the totem pole opposed to when she felt like they were vying for the top spot. Now she's like, oh, my family money, like my mom, that's not helping me be the star. Got it. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Wow, we talked so much about Dallas.
I can't believe this is happening. I thought we were just going to do like a little what up, fakakta, tell me. Oh my God, you're doing jazz hands.
Sorry, I want you to like, I want to talk about Lisa Barlow because I'm so confused by, okay, so like, I like loved actually the, I thought that the Salt Lake City reunion has been interesting because I think that there has been time for all of these women. It's everything is like a year plus since they filmed. And I think that I do worry a little bit about Heather, that she's like a little bit too aware of how she's doing everything. But I feel like for the most part, everybody is like, has taken a breath and been like, okay, I'm here to do the thing. Mary woke up, her producer got in her ear and was like, you need to talk.
Oh my God.
You need to
talk. Mary fucking killed it.
But in the same way that Mary woke up, and I don't think she's a different character because she's still not making a lot of sense, but she has an opinion and she's checking people for coming for her, etc. I don't know if you wanted me to hold for that siren.
No, keep going. Are you kidding?
I just didn't know, so I wanted to.
I love that dramatic. I thought I took it as a dramatic pause, and I am here for it.
But like Lisa Barlow's, to me, she was really a non-character for the whole season, I would say. And when I see her at the reunion, I don't think of like the same way that I feel like her producer was in her face and was like, you need to differentiate yourself from Meredith. You need to like speak up. You need to have an opinion. Dig your heels in if you need to. Talk whenever other people are talking. Like all of those things that I think that producers tell their people at reunions. It's like Lisa's performance seems so performative. It doesn't feel like Mary who like woke up. It feels like Lisa is like suddenly a totally different character to me. And I'm like, why are you arguing with Heather. And like Whitney the way you are? Why are you defending Jen so fiercely? Like you can be her friend. And I just feel like the performance, I'm into it because it feels like it sets up next season to be something, but it feels disingenuous to the entire season. And I don't know. I also am confused. But when I said that thing about like Heather, and I feel like she's like so aware of what she's doing, it's like, I don't know why Heather was doubling down on like, you're a bad friend to Meredith by being friends with Jen. And Meredith was like, I don't feel that way. And then like Heather kept saying it and was like, well, that's how I feel about your friendship. And Lisa was like, stop it. And then like Andy was like, okay, break. And then they kept going. And I was like, shut up. And I was like annoyed by it. And I was like, Heather's trying so hard to be like, to me, Heather is trying so hard to be a, like a moral center, because I think she knows that people responded to her being sort of regular and being quote unquote voice of reason, that I was like, you don't have skin in this game, Heather. Like, you can be Meredith's friend and think that Lisa's a shitty friend, but also like, why are you yelling at, or why are you arguing with Lisa about it? And then Lisa's reaction was like so insane. I don't want to say insane. It was so wild because it was so over the top that I was like, what is happening? I don't know.
So I think that Jen had a real bad season. She was acting a fool. She saw that nobody agreed with her online. So she came into the reunion and was like, let me shut the fuck up and punt to Lisa, who I have some sort of alliance with. We tried to market ourselves as a team. It fizzled.
I didn't realize that because I guess I don't follow them. So like I didn't know that.
And
that
I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah,
like, so
I didn't
like,
know that
didn't
was a dynamic that they
Jaleesa
had created.
Or something?
It was like literally the last episode was the first time we ever saw that they had like a quote unquote thing.
But I think that had been happening in real time. And Heather, who had been sort of targeted by Jen, who also targeted Whitney and has not yet actually apologized for that behavior, had been targeted by them pretty heavily and is looking at Lisa, who all of a sudden is very strongly defending Jen and is wondering why Lisa is defending Jen, who is the one who came for Lisa's best friend, Meredith, and did so in a way to raise questions about her family, specifically to hurt her for revenge, because she was pissed and wanted to make her friend feel bad. And so Heather is looking at Lisa and being like, you are standing so strong for this person who behaved terribly during filming, and you're not seeing that one of her primary targets is this woman who is your genuine, really good friend. And I think Lisa was like, shut the fuck up. Like, I think she's spending a lot.
I totally agree with that point. I just think that, like, Heather's caring too much since Meredith seems to not, you know? Like, to me, that's not fun to watch somebody scream back and forth when, like, the other person, it's not like Meredith is not there, and so Heather's like, that's my friend and I don't like the way you're treating her, and I thought you guys were real best friends. Like, Meredith is two seats over and she's like, I'm not listening to you. She actually said, I wasn't listening, which, like, makes me laugh because I love Meredith. She is my favorite.
She's
so ridiculous.
She's so important. I was like, I'm not joking.
Just,
I love her
it's
so much.
Special because I don't know how it, like, sustains itself, but, like, a housewife who doesn't seem seem like they need the show is a breath of fresh air when you have people like Jen and Heather and Lisa and Whitney that are all doing work. It's like Meredith doesn't care. And she seems like she doesn't, like, quote unquote, need the show. Obviously, she wants to be there. But whatever. Yeah, I think that was what was, like, irritating to me, that I was like, Meredith's there and she can speak up for herself if she feels. But she literally is saying, I don't feel. And then Heather just kept being like, well, that's how I feel about your friendship. And I was like, all right. But anyway, it's Lisa for me was just too much.
I feel like Heather has gotten a lot of public raves, praise, support, whatever, and in a way that she has been purposefully, shamed by her community, maybe her ex-husband's family, whatever else, she didn't feel like her voice carried value. Now she's in a position where being down to earth or you know, standing up to friends regardless of whether or not they deserve it, whatever else, she is being praised and supported and amplified in great number by the Bravo community. And I think she has taken that, and I don't feel like she's, like, you know, smelled the salts too long. I take it as she feels now for the first time that her opinion could be correct. Like, people might agree with her. She's not going to be isolated or harmed or divorced or whatever else if she decides to change her mind about something or voice her opinion. And she's harnessing that. And I think she's doing it in a way that maybe isn't necessarily in her best interest when it comes to defending someone who's not asking for the defense and isn't even literally paying attention to the formulation of it, which is so good. Guys, like, get on board. Engage with the disengage. To say I'm disengaging, is that not, like, one of the best things you could do for self-care, is to literally disengage from things that do not matter to you in your world? I love it. But I feel like Heather, I get her perspective. I also get Lisa's, who's probably gotten a ton of fucking shit, DMs from people, crazy shit throughout the season from people who disagree with her. So they want to tell her she's a terrible person. A connective thread I will never understand. Yeah. When it comes to trying to shame people online, I just think that, you know,
these are two women who are refusing to hear each other, who are yelling at people, explaining to them why it matters that they listen a little bit, like to acknowledge that you have a hand in this really unhealthy dynamic where you're just yelling at each other, regardless of whether or not you're speaking the truth. Like Whitney at one point saying, like, you have to, ideally you embrace that this is a relationship that both of you are participating in when it comes to not listening, behaving in a manner that one might pretend is toxic or suspect is toxic, whatever else. And Lisa like snaps at her and is like, essentially, go fuck yourself. Like, no, I'm not listening. But like, you can't even listen to the person who's trying to, as a middleman, which you could find suspect because it's, you know, the ally of this woman that you're not currently getting along with. But regardless, it's, I get Heather's perspective. I honestly get Lisa's too. It just so happens that I disagree with it. Like, Lisa is unwilling. Lisa has, in her mind, melded together holding a friend accountable with isolating, dropping them, and, you know, painting them as, like, someone who's inherently wrong. And that's tough.
I mean, she's made, Lisa has made the reunion something different, and it and has set, I think, the show up for a great season two. I do need to understand where Meredith and Lisa really stand, because according to Meredith, who is really not paying attention, like, they're fine. But I also do think,
I don't think they're fine.
I think it's weird that Meredith doesn't, like, feel away. But, you know, maybe she's choosing not to right now, and then maybe will suddenly address it, like, when they start. I mean, I don't know if they've started filming season two or what.
I think it would be helpful if Meredith actually said, like, instead of this whole, like, if you talk about my family, you're not my friend. Like, you need to specifically say something to Jen, because Heather saying something on your behalf and you not acknowledging that you agree with what Heather is saying makes me feel like you're not, I mean, you're not, you're like quite literally disengaging. Like, engage with this one point, and maybe you will in the next episode when it's the husbands in person and on screen, when we're talking about like the Seth stuff, like maybe you will a little, but it feels like Jen's getting away with a whole hell of a lot and Lisa's now carrying her water. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's,
how do you, think Jen has, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't at all.
I'm wondering how Jen was able to, I mean, she seems like a reactionary person, and I think that is what makes her a really interesting character, but also can be a really frustrating, and has been a frustrating person to watch this past season. But, like, how do you think she's decided to, like, how do you think she's reined it in? Because I feel like she wants to respond, but, like, watching Mary, who really got no words in edgewise with any arguments with Jen the whole season, really be like, stop. Or be like, don't talk to me. Or be like, great, apologize, but, like, I won't accept it the way you didn't accept mine. Like, all of those things. I can't believe Jen just, like, laughs at Andy. And I think it is a good look that she's, like, sort of taking all of the criticism and judgments in stride. But, like, how is she doing it? Like, how is that the same person?
Do you remember when Vicky showed up to the reunion where it was like the actual reveal of Cancergate and everything else, and everyone knew that she was lying and probably a participant, and by probably I mean absolutely 100%.
Yeah.
And she had like taken a half of a Valium or something, and she did so that she wasn't actually going to be physically or emotionally present when she knew that she was going to get dragged.
The same thing.
Phaedra did 100% the same thing. And it's like, I'm not saying that Phaedra or Jen, and who even knows what Vicky did. I'm not saying that there was like actual literal medication there, but I am saying that there is a way that a person can disconnect so fully in order to protect oftentimes their terrible opinions and behavior, where it looks like they're taking accountability, but they're actually forcing themselves to stay mute. And that's what, when I look at Jen, I do not believe her when she's just like taking it in. I think she has decided, because she has seen that
totally
waves of negative reaction that have come from her behavior, which this season I think have been like horrifying and spectacular all at once. Spectacular for us as a viewer, horrifying if I was one of those people in that scene. And I think she's just getting through it, but I have no idea who she currently is as a person. I think we're going to get more of it part three, because we're going to see Coach Shaw and like hear a little bit more about that. But, you know, I don't know who Jen is
pretending to be right now or is portraying herself to be. But I feel like it's not necessarily somebody taking accountability for their behavior. I don't know what to do with Jen. What I do know is it's like a little bit of a light LOL. It's an LOL junior when I just watch her kind of take a backseat to this, because it does feel like through Lisa being like, I'm not going to, you know, kick my friend to the curb just because they behaved in a manner that's really reprehensible several times and don't seem to really be taking genuine accountability and have tried to gaslight, that now all of this is, the spotlight is now on Lisa in a way where, yeah, it's sort of proving Heather's point a little bit. Like, is this person worthy of the strong defense that you're taking? But also, like, what is Jen going to do? I don't know. The way that Jen has behaved online is, like, not good. It's genuinely not good. And her pretending that she hasn't done this, I don't know if that's because someone else is doing parts of her social, is, like, completely strange to me. She... whether or not you post something versus liking something, I get the nuance there, but you're still participating in it. So if someone is saying Brooks is a piece of shit and Meredith's like, you posted it, but it's really you liked a tweet. I mean, you are still participating in this cycle. So let us not pretend that you have not taken some strong turns on social that affect your relationships with people.
I mean, she did apologize to... mm-hmm. Mary, and she apologized mm-hmm. to, did she apologize to Heather or Meredith? She apologized to Heather, sort of, about, like,
I don't remember,
about, like, getting drunk at the flapper 1920s party.
Oh yeah, in a, it really, was a really passive, like, aggressive way that didn't carry water. Yeah.
And then she apologized to Mary once. Mm-hmm. Andy,
which
was like
more genuine.
Yeah, yeah, and that felt more genuine. I think that she also expected the world, and I think that mm-hmm. some of the world did, but I think she thought the world was going to agree with her in all of her conflicts with Mary, because of, like, the hospital stuff and because of, like, the race stuff. I think she thought everything is stacked against Mary, who's a kookaloo. And now I think that Mary showed up, and I also think that people have responded, not to say, like, they love Mary and think she's relatable necessarily, but I think that they think she's a fascinating character and maybe more fascinating than Jen, who's, like, trying so hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that the women, I'm into all of them returning. I think that it would be another person would be interesting. Somebody who I would love another black woman to honestly to talk to Mary about some of her race stuff. I think that mm-hmm. Jen thinks she's able to talk about that stuff with Mary. And I think that I'm saying this as a white person, but I don't think that just being a person of color gives you, you know, authority to talk to a black woman about her blackness, you know? And I think that Mary seems to have some class stuff and some anti-blackness, like, in her bones. But I think telling that to a person that on television who doesn't like you there's no conversation happening. So I don't know how many, you know, black women are in Salt Lake City who want to be on Real Housewives, but I would love to see another black woman in the group to talk to Mary, because I feel like that is interesting to me, but Jen is not the person to have that conversation with Mary.
Yeah, I think it's, Jen is not a black woman, so she can't speak to the experience of being a black woman, which is something that I have learned and grown from after the episode that you and I recorded together, when I got some amazing insight from black Bravoholics who were like, here's my perspective of why Jen is not in a position to speak to Mary about the experiences of being black. Like, you,
yeah,
I don't know, when navigating that conversation again as a white woman, I don't necessarily, like, no disrespect, but, like, white Bravo fans who are talking about this stuff online, it's like, I don't really care about your opinion. I really truly don't care. I want to hear the opinions of black AGs, black Bravoholics who are watching this dynamic, who have different experiences and will have different opinions, but have their voices matter in this. I just don't think that anyone else's do when it comes to what Jen has accused Mary of and Mary's response.
I also
you know
think
at the end of the day
that if they were real friends, or or friendly coworkers, and there was a conversation that offered more grace, like, you know, like, our sons are black men, you know, like, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Or, like, my husband's dark skin, you know, or browner skin, you know, how do you think that makes me feel? Like, if there was a conversation, not that that needs to be the conversation, Jen can be annoyed. I just don't think she's the person to try to have this nuanced conversation with a black woman. So sort of in the same vein, what do you think, like, that teaser for next reunion when Heather's, like, doubling down on saying that Jen is aggressive and Jen's like, you shouldn't say a woman of color? And do you think it's taken out of context, or do you think it's as icky as it might be?
I think it's going to be as icky as it might be. And I think it's similar to what happened with Ashley on Potomac, where there is, like, the missed connection of understanding the ways in which certain words just genuinely should not be used when speaking about black women or women of color. And I think it was the word aggressive, right?
Yeah,
was that
it was
the
aggressive.
Word just shouldn't be used. And it's something, again, that some of us have learned by listening to other people, and something in a position where I found really helpful to hear, like, Dr. Wendy's perspective on all of this. And it doesn't mean that the description of that behavior didn't happen. It doesn't mean that you're okaying that behavior. What it means is there are words that just are weighted differently when used against women of color, and specifically, you know, black women. Yeah. And Jen is not a black woman, but she is a woman of color. And so just don't use the word. You just don't use the word. You come up with a different word. And if you don't understand that, as I didn't watching the Potomac reunion at first, it's like, okay, well, you know, listen to some other people who have information and experiences that matter more than yours in that dynamic. It's just, if you are a white woman and a woman of color is telling you that that word has been that word is triggering and has been used against people of color and black women, you shouldn't use it. That's just as simple as it is. Use a different word. Use reactive. Use something else. Just don't use the word aggressive. Doesn't mean that the behavior was okay. It just means use another word. I don't know. I'm taking a dramatic pause.
No, I was just thinking, like, I could talk about this again forever, but we haven't even talked about it. I forgot New Jersey premiered. I forgot Atlanta was on. There's so much.
I mean, shout out to Atlanta. I think I'm going to have some thoughts, but I honestly think that they're going to happen more after we watch whatever's happening with Bolo, is the gentleman's name, tomorrow. We're recording this on Saturday.
He's like an Instagram person. Do you,
good for him.
Do you know, do you have an opinion or any thoughts about sort of, like, there's like a collection of friends this season, even some that haven't been, like, Fallon showed up and they were like, hey, Fallon. And I was like, did we get introduced to her? Do you have any thoughts about, like, these women and the friends?
I do have a satchel of gold that I'm just remembering that is related to that a little bit, from Ben in Pittsburgh, who says, hi, Sarah, love your pod so much, but I'll make this quick. Why are there 10 ladies on the Atlanta cast trip, but only 5 peach holders? Is Bravo trying to cut costs and not pay full-time salaries to these women stars? Never has any other franchise have so many friends that propel story and only have 5 actual full-time cast members. Please make it make sense so I don't think it's a devaluation of the women of this cast by Bravo, and by that I mean not paying black women fair wage. I may not have been graceful writing this because I've been drinking, so edit the points as you see fit. XOXO. Ben, shout out to Ben.
I think that, do you mind if I respond?
Go for it.
I think,
do it.
In my opinion, I think that what I, like, you know, every city is different, and I sort of love that, like, Atlanta has become sort of, always has had, like, Marlo and Shamia and then Tanya, and there have been, like, Tammy, whose, you know, nephew came to Florida, and, you know, I like that they're, has been a lot of friends, and that universe has really been built out. And I think Beverly Hills does too, that are a lot of them are, like, former housewives. So I don't mind the friends, because I think that, like, it gives that city and that franchise an identity that's, like, different than, say, like, New York, which, like, doesn't really have any friends, or Potomac, which, you know, has, like, Katie Rost or whatever. But
Shout out Charisse.
I love her so much. I do think it's interesting, though. I think, do you think some of it is tied up in the nini of it all? Like, they didn't know if there were enough moving pieces as far as drama, and so they were testing lots of women, and then those women all stuck around longer than maybe they would have. Like, I feel like usually they test new women, then they start filming with people together, and I wonder if, like, they were testing Fallon and LaToya, and there's another friend with, like, whose name starts with an A, who's, like, quote-unquote Portia's friend, but also Shamia's in the mix this season and has confessionals, and then there's Tanya and Marlo. So, like, there's, like, six women. I don't know if they were like, okay, Drew's the full-time, but maybe we'll keep everyone around and just see if anybody else pops. I'm not sure.
I don't know, and I don't know how much of this plays into the fact that not because of anything that she did wrong, but because Drew's husband's parent died, Drew had to leave to go to that funeral, and as a result had to quarantine before and after. So she missed, I assume, 2 weeks before the time that she was away, and then 2 weeks or however long she quarantined and got tested when she came back. And I'm thinking that they were probably building other friends of into at least those scene dynamics, knowing that Drew was going to have to, like, silo film in her household and whatever else, which is its own can of mishigas. And I also think that because of COVID, maybe they were thinking, like, the more the merrier with some of this stuff.
And if somebody got sick, that they would have, like, sort of backups. Like LaToya's here in case, you know,
I don't think it was a sick thing. I don't think it had anything to do with people actually getting sick, because that would make me feel very uncomfortable. And also, I don't see that exemplified on any other franchise. I don't think it had to do with anything, because I think they're also pretending that they're, you know, abiding by safety guidelines, sure, because they're wearing a visor now and then. So it's like, I don't know. I don't think my opinion personally is that that doesn't play into this dynamic. And would make me kind of question production if it did, but I don't think it does. I just think it's like they're shooting to the moon a little bit when it comes to, like, actual fair wages. I think that's and the potential devaluation of these women by not giving some of them their due peaches. And I'm looking directly at Marlo Hampton, who is, like, giving us literally everything. Why isn't she holding a peach? Or why aren't they being more honest about why she's not holding a peach? I don't know. I don't have an answer for it. You were going to say something about Fallon. Like, why is Fallon there? Well, I don't know why Fallon is there.
I don't think we were really introduced to her ever. And that is what is confusing when, like, someone shows up and it says, like, so-and-so's friend. Mm-hmm. I feel like usually people get introductions like, I met LaToya at such and such, and she's my new friend, and now she's coming over with oysters, and I'm going to introduce Cynthia to her, or whatever, you know? And I think that when, like, Fallon shows up at a trip and they're like, Fallon, hey, and she's like, I'm staying next to her with my husband. I'm like, who are you? Like, nobody addressed. Mm-hmm. And then Candy on Watch What Happens Live was like, you got to stay tuned. This whole thing happens with Fallon. And I was like, did I miss the moment where she was, like, established as a character in the story that I'm watching? This is a tangent. I mean, just an aside, though. Like, I really am surprised that I'm enjoying Drew as much as I am. I feel like it's a shame that she had to, like, bow out. It's a shame that, you know, that they lost her in-law, that her in-law passed. But she, I think, is, like, interesting to the dynamic, and also is sort of, for the first time in Atlanta, like, think, like, I feel like her and LaToya, like, their stuff feels interesting, and it's not, like, layered in, like, Kenya or Nini stuff. It's like they mm-hmm. have their own stuff. And I also liked that she and Portia had a moment where she was like, listen, I'm not into everybody acting like Kenya's behavior last night was cool all of a sudden now that she's in a better mood. So I just am into Drew. I'm into her thus far. And her husband seems terrible, but I'm, like, interested in that story because what is their relationship, you know? And, like,
yeah, I think that it, had we been properly introduced to Drew, at least in the dynamics of the group, which we're only now getting,
yeah,
before we got all this stuff with Ralph, it would have been a little bit, it would have helped her. It would have helped her in her introduction to Housewives, to us, to the other women, and all of those dynamics. And again, this was nobody's fault. It just so happens that because of this unfortunate passing and because of COVID and everything else, that didn't come to pass. But we're getting it now, and I think she's great. Like, I'm still not over the autograph. I think that that was fucking hilarious. The way she did it was great. Also, the way that she's, like, standing up to Kenya, better than some of Kenya's friends are. Good for her. Like, Kenya's kind of a mess right now and has been a shitty host. And cannot talk to women about the challenges of being a single mother when, like, several of them have been or are currently single parents. Like, totally. That's tough when you are telling someone they don't understand your experience and they have experienced an experience, maybe not your specific one, but you don't tell someone that they don't know how difficult it is to be a single mother when they are a single parent or navigating a separation or soon on that or have in the past. Like, that's difficult. And also, like, when Candy says something, everyone should shut the fuck up and listen. Like, the fact that Kenya doesn't value her and also did not give enough money to her charitable endeavor is very annoying to me, and I look forward to seeing that play out on the reunion. But I have to say, oh, tell me what you're looking at me, you're giving me a face.
No, I totally agree with that all.
Teresa, Jackie, Gia, and Evan. My God. Like, so I just have to say, I'm like, I was one of the last people to see it in that I watched it live with everybody because I had several friends who had screeners I did not watch in advance. And so I had heard something, yada, 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 so crazy, Gia. And I didn't have any context. So what I thought was going to happen at the end of the episode, even though this doesn't make any sense, is I thought Jackie was going to somehow accuse Gia of helping with that rumor, or maybe like Gia was working out at a gym or something and Gia's the one that told Teresa. So I was super unprepared for what actually happened, which was like mouth agape.
OMFG. Okay, so tell me how you feel about...
I feel like Teresa's pulling this out of her ass. It's coming from a place of jealousy or something else. She's trying to reset narrative where finally it's not her family or her husband who's fucked up. It's somebody else's. None of the actual details of the rumor, of which there aren't any, make sense. I find it very suspicious that she's specifically saying Jim and not saying women or anything else. I think she's dangling carrots that feel to me very dangerous. I said that on, I was in my first Clubhouse panel yesterday with an amazing group of people and said that at one point, and some folks responded back and they were like, we don't see it, and also Teresa's not that smart.
I was gonna say,
and
that
I completely understand that perspective as well. It just to me feels very suspicious that she's using the phrase Jim and whatever he's doing there and is dancing around something without getting any detail. And I think a part of that is because this is all a lie. And I think a part of that is also she's dancing around some stuff that I think is not great.
I think I agree that...
Oh, Damien got a foster puppy whose name is Sarah, and I think it's so sweet that you named her after me in honor of the 200th episode. And listen, we're both bitches, so there we go.
Just kidding. Her name is Bethany Frankel. So I agree that – I think I agree with her pulling out of her ass, although she was drunk, and I don't know how – I don't think she's smart enough sober, let alone drunk, to be so intentional and strategic, but it just seems unfounded in her refusal to acknowledge where the information comes from is totally reminiscent of Kim D. I was so grateful for the flashback. I'm grateful that the show isn't trying to give Teresa a better edit than she deserves, because it was totally reminiscent of her own freak out on Kim. But I don't know. I wasn't sure the way you started this. I wasn't sure if you were trying to say that you thought Jackie was totally out of line for the comparison of, like, I've heard, quote unquote, this rumor, which, like, maybe was a real DM that she got or somebody told her, and also, or maybe was something she was totally inventing. But, like, she was just making a comparison, and Teresa now, like, I'm so, Teresa is so dumb. It's so hard to ever root for her because she's so not smart and so reactive, and so therefore it's like her being like, you're a FNC, and then like leaves, and like, and then Margaret's like, wait, what happened? Oh wait,
don't. Margaret was so
kids
good.
Should never be it. Kids should never be brought up. And I was like, yes, but also like Jackie's husband and their kids, like, talking about Jackie's marriage by proxy affects her minor children. Your kid is maybe over 18 and has been on the show since she was 2. Like, don't, let's not try to like don't bring up her marriage and try to like plant seeds about it and be like, where there's smoke, there's fire. Also, she went around to everybody in the cast and did it. I was like, how?
She literally did it 15 times. I was like, how? She's like, everybody's talking about it, and they're only talking about it because Teresa said to literally every single person.
And like nobody else,
hi, my name is Teresa.
Nobody else took it. Like, not even her ally, Jen. So I feel like nobody else was like taking the bait to go with. Everyone else was like, okay, maybe not right here. Or like, and Melissa was like, no. So like, I was like, is Teresa wasted and just like is doing a good job of seeming not trashed? But clearly she was. But like her reaction to Jackie saying that, I was like, okay, like listen, it is kind of gross to bring up a kid, but also this kid is an adult, and also she's just making a point, and your reaction kind of proves the point, which is like, you're so bent out of shape now, but like you're saying that my husband's cheating on me and that like my marriage is a sham.
And Jackie has since said online and wherever else that there was no allegation of this with Gia. Gia has never been accused, to Jackie's knowledge, of anything having to do with any kind of drug use or anything else. She was truly bringing it up to say, here is what happens when I pull something out of my ass specifically to harm you. I do think she could have pulled something else out of her ass or referenced something having to do with Joe.
Yep.
She does make a valid point that she is pulling something out of her ass while like winking and saying obviously that this is not real and I don't have any details and whatever else, in comparison to what Teresa was actively trying to do, which was to say that there are rumors IRL truly of Evan cheating or doing whatever wherever. So it's, you know, Jackie's using this as like a comparison example of a real genuine truth, in the sense that like Teresa actually did do this to actively try to harm Jackie and her family and marriage and whatever else. I do think it's wild to have used Gia, because when this happened, I instinctively, as a physical response, laughed my ass off, because I was like, holy shit, this is crazy. This is not at all what I was expecting. What just happened? You're using Teresa's kid. This is like the one, Teresa is like a mama bear with her cubs, like crazy. And then the very next thing I thought was, is this true? Which goes to show, I think, the power of saying these things on camera, which
absolutely,
Teresa could learn from. Also goes to show, maybe don't use the kid. And also, when it comes to shaming, which is like the moral theme of today, a lot of gross people commented on Gia's posts and made, oh, you're doing coke in the bathroom, blah, 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 shit.
I'm laughing because it's like absurd to me, because like
it's
just
absurd.
Like, leave
people
her alone.
Trash.
She's a kid.
None of those people. She is a kid. And I'm sorry. I don't care if you're 18. Gia wasn't coming for anyone. And I look at her in the same way I look at oh my God, I just literally forgot her name. Carrie with the K's child, Olivia, who we obviously don't know as much as know as well, rather. And I just think like these are kids who, when you introduce them into these very adult kind of conversations, I don't love it. This was obviously done without Gia's consent, and it was done as a imaginary example. And it shows Jackie's argument, the power of saying these things and people actually believing them. And it also shows Teresa's argument back, which is like, don't involve the children. And I get what you're saying when it comes to Jackie's children were involved because this is harming her marriage. And I agree with that. But it wasn't like Teresa was specifically naming them naming them against behavior. And I just thought it was super wild and super crazy. Much like Potomac, I'm team the table. And I also am like, you know,
Team Margaret, like being like, what happened with like her Evian bottle?
I'm super team Margaret. I'm very team Lex. I have loved Margaret's assistant since day one. I love her voice. I find it very calming and very soothing. I'm dead ass serious. I love them. I love their dynamic together. But I do think like it's interesting how wild people are getting online. Hopefully and fortunately, not as crazy as people got during Potomac. But like Steve, aka Faces by Bravo, is now using the emoji of a pumpkin for Team Jack-O-Lantern versus Team Tree. And nothing makes me feel more connected to the Bravo community than looking at an emoji of a tree and an emoji of a pumpkin and knowing immediately what's being discussed, which I think is what our wonderful little language in this little world we call home.
You know, it's interesting, starting the season, the first the beginning of the episode, I was like kind of confused what was happening. And then, you know, it starts, or it rewinds 3 days before. And all of this stuff was happening. And I was like, are we just forgetting that the last season ended with Teresa co-signing Danielle's behavior, influencing Danielle's behavior, and then really not being held accountable? I mean, we just watched Monique, in my opinion, really be dismissed for her arguments for her why about her physical altercation.
Absolutely.
And then so much so that she, you know, allegedly quit, but she's no longer with the show. Teresa was really let off scot-free, in my opinion. Danielle was not. I don't know if she quit, fired, whatever, but Teresa was really not held accountable. And then it wasn't brought up. I was happy that they talked about it in relation to Margaret and Jackie. And I was thinking, is this the season go with my train of thought here. Like, I was Drew and LaToya and the ways that maybe they will be pushed more to the forefront if this season goes well and the other women will be able to, like, kind of graduate to sort of being, like, the aunties. I wonder, like, is this the time that Teresa will sort of finally be, like, a supporting character for a season where I don't need to watch her be the lead and be annoyed by her? But now she's the center of the drama. So, like, even though it was, like, Jackie and Margaret being, like, Jackie, she's been doing too much and, like, hasn't been held accountable. And she's been mean and nasty. And she's responsible in many ways for Danielle assaulting me. Now, like, the way the episode ended, I was like, well, fucking A. Now she's the center of the argument. Like, because of the way it happened, the way her confrontation with Jackie happened, it wasn't like Jackie and Margaret together being like, we're taking you down. It was like Jackie saying this thing that was so inflammatory to Teresa that now that Teresa and Jackie are going to be at it. And I'm like, ugh, once again, another season of Teresa being the lead. I mean, at least it's with Jackie and not Melissa, but it's like, I'm so tired of Teresa being the lead of New Jersey. I need a season where she's like sixth banana.
I don't know that that's going to happen while she's on New Jersey. I mean, I just don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know. I just don't. I'm going to say over and over again 1,000 times. Don't know if that's going to happen.
It's never happened in, like, LVP was always center and Bethany was always center. Like, not necessarily literally, but just, like, of, like, the way the stories were shaped.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Nene had seasons where she was, like, sort of on the side, you know? And I think that Candy has always been, like, an alpha, but has had plenty of seasons where she was not, like, center of the drama. So I don't know. It's just, like, give Teresa a season where she is allowed to be, like, the voice of reason or, like, Melissa's pal and give Melissa advice for Melissa being in the drama.
The second she flipped the table, they flipped the script. And it's ever since.
You're right.
Around her from the introduction of her family without her knowledge and or approval through now. And I don't see that going away this season. I am curious because Jackie at one point said she stopped filming a couple days because she was so upset by something. And I don't know if that's going to come later in the season or if that happened
was those 3 days
during this. Because we didn't see her talking to Evan about it or anything else. We just saw her with that glittery Chanel, like, looking forlorn. Forlorn. Yes. As she's, words are fun. As she's, like, leaving the kitchen to go confront Tree. Like, I'm wondering if that already happened or is happening. She has said that this literally was, like, the first night of filming when all of this took place. I don't in any way believe that alcohol was an influence at all for a single second with Tree. She walked in with a little nugget that had been given to her or to me, most apparently had made up, created whatever, and decided to distribute it to as many people as she possibly could.
Totally.
And is now trying to pretend that that distribution is an example of why she needed to say it, because people are talking about it, because I told people about it, because I made up this thing.
Yeah.
And because I'm dating now. And I'm seeing people, and some of those people, it turns out, are married. It just makes me feel like that's connected, because that's also a thing that happened. So because that happened, that makes me think that maybe this is happening. But regardless of whether or not it's true or not, and I don't have any details or information, and I don't have any names, I just feel like I absolutely must talk about this. And the wild thing to me is Jackie has also said she doesn't think it was fed to Tree in any way by production. She thinks that production was shocked about this. Genuinely was like, I don't think, you know, she was like, I think that everybody was taken aback by this. I don't know how much of that I believe, but I don't think production fed this to Tree. I think that
this wasn't Tree, like Bethany with the Tom pictures,
right? I think that something in Tree's corner happened. Maybe it was with her team, maybe it was with a friend of hers who was like, how are you going to get back at her? Or like, what if you said this thing? Or Evan's really attractive, how could he not have stepped out? Or whatever else. And it just became whatever monstrous accusation she's been running with since.
I think it's really interesting what you said about Jackie taking time off. And I wonder if that was like those, the quote unquote 3 days that mm-hmm. there was a gap, because I felt like it was disappointing to not see Jackie find out what happened on camera. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who's the friend? Is the friend like a real friend who overheard this happen at the party? And it was like, I need to tell you this. Or was it like a producer who told her, and she flipped the fuck out and was like, I'm not filming, and I'm quitting this show. Like, this is my fucking marriage. And then obviously got talked off a ledge probably and was like, listen, the only way to write it is by filming. Mm-hmm. And so then she came back to it. But I wish that we had seen that. Like, I wish that even if it was a producer, we saw it. Because to see Jackie hear that, mm-hmm. and maybe they do have it, but maybe out of respect for, like, Evan, because maybe he flipped out or something. I don't know. But I wonder what happened. That's great. I didn't know she said that because, you know, I don't follow anybody except Candy. So I don't see any I don't see any of the drama unless somebody else tells it to me, or like it gets retweeted into my timeline or my discovery on Instagram.
I think I had heard it previously on a Zoom that we had with cast members. Like, it might have been a Halloween thing with Bravo celebrities in the fall. But she did also say it on a Clubhouse with, which, guys, you got to follow me on Clubhouse. So much fun. With, I think it was Kate Casey. It must have been Kate Casey, friend of the pod. Shout out Kate, who has been having some really fascinating long form conversations with various housewives on Clubhouse, and had one with Jackie where Jackie was like, yeah, I had to take a couple days off. I think she also said it then. I mean, more to come, you know, team the table. But also team Jackie.
Totally,
but like
team
also, like, you know, just in time for Halloween 2021, I guess I am adding a pumpkin emoji to my IG handle. Damian Bellino, I could talk to you forever and ever, amen. But we don't have forever and ever, amen. We've got like a solid couple seconds left. Can you tell the AGs? And happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
To be 26.
And happy,
can't wait.
And happy birthday to AG and to you. It's really exciting. So thanks for having me. And y'all can find me on all the things. At Damian Bellino, that's Twitter, Instagram, Clubhouse, which I've been on once, I think. You can find me on all those things. So find me. It's Damian with an A.
And guys, Patreon, new episodes went up this week with Alex Zaragoza from Vice. Bonjour Bitches, Amanda from It's All Happening. I just put up a 1-hour episode of Papa Audio where I listened to the first episode of AG. It's the number one way to support me and the pod and Andy's Girls, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. The OG of the AG level gets exclusive access to our upcoming Galentine's Zoom Kiki this Thursday, February 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So look for that on patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And again, that's an exclusive Zoom Kiki event with fellow AGs where we are going to mention it all. In lieu of a small business satchel this week, guys, I'm going to put some information and organizations in the show notes for this week's episode of organizations in Texas that you can help, as unfortunately millions of Texans are currently affected by this horrifying failure of, I mean, essentially everybody in government power. And it's just really shocking and deeply upsetting to see what's coming out of Texas. So please support those organizations that I'll link in show notes below. And follow me on Instagram. What a great transition. Instagram at Dame Galley. OG of the AG, love you to bits. Thank you so much for episode 200. Here's to a million more. Bye, guys.